opened the second half of Sefer Shmos this week. Kadosh Baruch Hu presents us with an opportunity and an expectation. The Rambam counts that as a mitzvah. It's the opening mitzvah in the way that the Rambam organizes the world of Kachim into two of the 14 Svarim, Avoda and Karbanos. Begins with the Hilchas Beis HaBechira and the opening mitzvah Hilchas Beis HaBechira. V'also li'mikdash v'shachanti b'socho, a mitzvah to make a mikdash. The Rambam begins to unfold it in the opening lines of Hilchas Beis HaBechira. Historically, Jews have fulfilled that mitzvah in different ways over the course of Jewish history. We had the Mishkan, we had various Mishkanos, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, Meher Yibana Beis HaMikdash. We look forward to the Bayis HaShlishi. The first three prakim of the Rambam's Hilchas Beis HaBechira, the first three prakim of Sefer Avoda, are dedicated to that mitzvah. After the first opening halachos, where he lays out the mitzvah in thumbnail, he spends the rest of the first parak unpacking the details of how you build the structure, the walls, different which sort of rooms and architectural structures are required. You have a certain number of indoor rooms. You have the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Heichal, and so forth. Then you have the open space, fenced-in open space, the Yazara, the Chatzar, is called by different names in different iterations. So the Rambam, over the course of Perak Aleph of Beis HaBechir, gives you all the details of what the structure needs to look like in order to mekayim this mitzvah. And over the course of the following two Prakim, Prakim Beis and Prakim Gimel, he talks about the Kalei HaMikdash. The entire second paragraph is dedicated to halachas and mizbeach, because there are so many deen mizbeach, and the rest of the kelim are dealt with in the third paragraph. He talks about how you build a menorah and how you build mizbeach hazahav. The shulchan, the kior vekano. These three prakim are an unpacking what the Rambam lays out at the beginning of the first parak, a mitzvah to make a mikdash, and it involves rooms, and it involves seven kelim, and he lists them. He lists them in parak aleph, halacha vav, the osim b'mikdash kelim. In the Frankel edition, it says the osim mishkan, the osim b'mikdash shiva kelim. So you know that you have an exact list. And here are the seven kelim. Mizbeach la'olam, kevesh ha'olam ba'olam mizbeach. So you have the outer mizbeach for karbanos, and you have the ramp, and then those are dealt with in the imperic vays. And so that's so far two, mizbeach and the kevesh. Kior v'kano, the kior with its base, that's four. And the mizbach ha'ketoris, and the menorah, and the shulchan ovacher in the heichal, and that's a total of seven. And those seven kelim are unpacked and explicated and elaborated on in Prakim Beis and Gimel. Notice anything odd about that list? It talks about on the outside you have the Mizbach HaOla and the Kevesh and the Kiyar and the base of the Kiyar, and inside the Heichal you have the Menorah and the Shulchan and Mizbach HaKetores. Notice anything odd about that list of seven Kelim? Yeah. Where's the Ark? And you look in the Frank Arama, I'm the Osim Mishkan Shiva Kalim. So we know we're not missing something. And over the course of Prakim Beis and Gimel, nary a word about how to make an Aron. Very, very strange. Especially since it's the very first item discussed in Chumash. The Torah says, also Mishkan V'Shachanti B'Sochem. Two Psukim later, we're ready to talk about the details of how you build an Aron. And it's nowhere to be found. It's even more ironic, because the Rambam doesn't count the kelim separately. The Rambam doesn't count the kelim separately. The Rambam writes in Sefer HaMitzvahs, and that's what he follows here. He says it's one mitzvah, it's a mitzvah with many parts. The mitzvah is also a mitzvah for Shachanti B'Socham, and all the different kelim are part of making a mikdash. Making a mikdash includes building the walls and building the furniture. The Ramban disagrees. Ramban has running Hasagas on Sefer HaMitzvahs. He doesn't like that svara. He thinks that the kelim are not part of making mikdash. Mikdash just means making the walls, making the architectural structure. He says you don't count the kelim for a different reason, because the kelim are, it's no mitzvah to make a menorah, it's just a hechsher mitzvah to hadlak as a menorah. There's no mitzvah to make a shulchan, it's just a hechsher mitzvah to lechem apanim. No mitzvah to make a mizbeach, but you want to bring karbonis, you have to have a kasher mizbeach. As the Ramban says, ironically, the only kli that I'm going to count is the only kli which doesn't really have any specific function. It's not a hechsher to any subsequent mitzvah. The only kli whose construction I will count is, which kli isn't really used for a mitzvah? The aron. Right? So ironically, the Ramban only counts the aron. Meanwhile, the Rambam says, no, all the kli are part of the mitzvah, also the mikdash, and the aron is missing. Strange. Very, very strange. The lost ark. Taka is a lost ark. The halachically lost ark. The mystery of the missing aron. And then it gets even stranger. That's kasha number one. The first three prakim of the Rambam Hilchos Beis HaBechira, the mitzvah of making mikdash. Then the Rambam spends the next three prakim, prakim Dalet, Hey, and Vav, on the essence of mikdash. It's something that he does in a few different places in the Mishnah Torah, where he'll first deal with the tzivoy, like Hilchos Talmud Torah opens with two prakim dedicated to how you go about doing Talmud Torah, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and then specifics in Perek Beis about how you're supposed to run a yeshiva. And then in Perek Gimel, he sort of takes a step back and says, let's talk about the concept. Let's talk about Kisra Shel Torah. So he does it here as well. First three prakim are clearly dedicated to the mitzvah of Asiyas Mikdash, how you make first Perek, how you make the building, the second, the next two prakim, how you make the kelim. And then he's done. Prakim Dalet Hei and Vav, before he goes on to any other mitzvahs, are dedicated to the essence of Mikdash, the concept of Mikdash, the Kiddush of the Mikdash. The Mishnah, and they're based on Mishnayos. They're based on Mishnayos. The opening parak, I mentioned to some of you last night, opening parak of Seder Taras is an unusual parak. Because even though it's the first parak of Maseches Kelim, it's not really the first parak of Maseches Kelim. It is listed as Kelim Perak Aleph, but it's not about Kelim. The halachas of Kelim begin in Perak Beis. The first parak of Maseches Kelim is like an introduction to Seder Taras. Seder Taras has an introduction. The introduction is, number one, levels of Tumah, levels of Avos HaTumah, and then it's paired with levels of Kedusha. Eretz Yisrael Mekudesh is Mekar Ratz, Eretz Yisrael is more Kedusha than the rest of the world, and here's a proof. Here's an afkamina. Then we work our way up. Yerushalayim, and so on and so forth. Harabayis, all the way up to the pinnacle, which is Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's the way the Mishnayos build what we call the Eser Kedushas. That's the term that Mishnayos use. The latter half of the first parak of Seder Taras. The Eser Kedushas, from Eretz Yisrael all the way up to Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Rambam quotes that material and builds it out more over the course of Prakim Dalet, Hey, and Vav of Beis HaBechira. He discusses the levels of Kedusha of Mikdash. The Rambam reverses the order, though. Instead of starting with the base level of Eretz Yisrael and working his way up, most of the Holich, the Rambam does Pochus V'Holich. He begins at the top of the mountain, literally. He begins, but figuratively also. He begins with the Kedusha of Kodesh HaKadoshim and then builds his way down. And what's the very first thing he says? The very first word. Evan Haisa B'Kodesh HaKadoshim. He says there was a stone in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When the Kohen Gadol would go in once in Yom Kippur, he would see the Evan Shasiya. And the Aron was there. That's where the Aron was placed. Very, very dramatic. Evan Haisa B'Kodesh HaKadoshim B'Ma'aravo Sha'aleha Haya Aron Munach. And then he describes some of the other items that were around there, the Tzenes Haman, and so on and so forth. Wow. And then he works his way down from there. So the Aron was missing the first three prakim. All of a sudden, when you talk about Kedusha, it's like front and center, striking. And the Rambam, again, shows, usually he tries to, he was carefully as possible to not only the content, but the language and the formulation of Chazal. And here he made a conscious decision to flip it and to open with the Aron. Not only that, but there's even a sharp second kasha. If our sharp first kasha on the opening of three prakim was the Aron is missing, our sharp second kasha on the next three prakim, not only does he open with the Aron, which is striking, curious, But there's a problem as well. A problem which ironically is raised by two very, very different achronim with very, very, very different styles in many ways. But they happen to ask the same kasha and in almost identical formulation, which is striking. The Rav and Rabbi Yaakov Emden. You look in the back of the Frankel Avoda, they have the Pirush of Rabbi Yaakov Emden on Hilchos Beis Bechira. And the way they ask the same kasha with kemat the same formulation, which is, the Rambam goes on to say, this is really the lost art. The Rambam goes on to say, I, in the second Beis Hamikdash, was no Aron, as the Mishnayos record. Kohan Gadol, throughout the period of the second Beis Hamikdash, all those hundreds of years, they would go in Yom Kippur, and there was just a stone. The Mishnayos described, there would just be Mazah the Dam against the stone, because there was the Aron. Where was the Aron? So Rambam says, you wonder where the Aron is? You're looking for the lost Ark? It's down in the basement. The Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the Beis Hamikdash, built a subterranean chamber, knowing that there was a concern that the Aron might not last forever, that Churban and Golos might come. So Shlomo HaMelech had the foresight to build a subterranean chamber to keep the Aron safe, and indeed, the last truly free king of the Jews, of Malchus Beis David, he learned about Yoshiyahu a little bit in the background leading up to the story of Gedalia. And so in Gedalia, Yoshiyahu, you remember, was the last truly sovereign king. After him, his descendants were all puppets of Egypt, of Babylon, of some empire or another. So Yoshiyahu realized that things were getting dicey, and Yoshiyahu realized that things were getting risky, and he made the executive decision, now is the time to take the Aron, put it in the basement, and that's why when many years later, Nebuchadnezzar shows up, and Rachman Litzlan destroys the first Beis HaMikdash, there's no Aron to find. And so the Aron, during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Aron was there, just down below. It was still in Makom HaMikdash, it just wasn't on the ground level. It was tucked away in the basement. Interesting. Story time with Rambam. Well, what's going on? It's a Sefer Halacha. Now, Rambam does sometimes give historical background to different dinim. He starts Hilchos Avodah Zarah with a very lengthy telling of the development, intellectual history of Avodah Zarah, and then the rise of Avraham Avinu. There are times when he tells stories that are important background. He tells the story of Chanukah, the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah, you remember. But what's striking that the Rav and Yaakov Avinu both point out is that the Gemara actually has machlokas about this in Yuma Daf Nun Beis Nun Gibbo, approximately. During machlokas at Tanayim, how do you read the psukim? Whether Aron b'makomo nignaz or Aron galal abavel. Some Tanaim say the Aron was gone. That we know, incontrovertible. We know for sure there was no Aron in the Kodesh HaKadoshim during the second Beis Hamikdash period. That was a direct observation by many Kohanim Gadolim over hundreds of years. That we know. But where it is, was the machlokas, and based on reading the psukim, some said Aron galal abavel. That the Nebuchadnezzar took the Aron when he came, and it's somewhere in a museum or in a storehouse. Somewhere in Iraq or in. And the other opinion, Tanan, is no. Aron b'makomo nignaz, that the Aron already had been stored away safely in the basement. The machlokas ha-Tanan. The machlokas ha-Tanan about history. So the Rambam, what's the Rambam doing? Not only is it's curious, it's striking that he's getting involved in the story, but that's striking. It's not shver. But Shver, you have machlokas hatam, how to read the psukim. The Rambam is paskening on a non-halachic machlokas. How are you paskening on that? What does that mean? Machlokas hatam. Machlokas how to read the psukim. Since when does the Rambam spend time in the Mishnah Torah being machriyat? Machlokas Rashi Ramban, machlokas Tanoim, machlokas Amoroim, machlokas Balei Medrash, how to read a pasuk when there's no relevance to halacha. That's not what the Rambam is seeking to do in the Mishnah Torah. So that's what both the Rav and Yaakov Emden point out. Ma pesher advar? Why is Rambam seeking to be machriya, trying to paskin on a historical machlokas, trying to paskin? It's a machlokas in Mizbar Kor. It's a meaningful machlokas. The Tanam are debating how to read the psukim, but that's not the Rambam's line in Mishnah Torah to give definitive approach to Mizbar Kor. His line is to give definitive approach to halacha. So that's strange. So there's in the first three prakim. There's not enough Aron. In the next parak, there's too much Aron. What's going on? When we talk about the mitzvah of Asiyas HaMikdash, the Aron doesn't seem to be part of it. In Then we talk about Kedushas HaMikdash. All of a sudden, he has a lot to say about the Aron. It's front and center. Not only that, but he feels the need to be machria that the what appears to be an entirely historical machlokas, namely that where is the Aron located? Is the Aron in Eretz Yisrael? Is the Aron deep below on Har HaBayis? Or is the Aron hundreds of miles to the northeast somewhere in Babel? A pair of kashas. So the approach seems to be the following. This is based on ideas that the Rav expressed at different times. It's based in part on ideas that Rav Shechter quotes from the Rav in Eretz HaTzvi Simyud Beis. And as well, more recently, they published a number of years ago, Igros HaGrid, that letters in learning that the Rav wrote as a young man. They have one letter that he wrote as a kid, I think before Bar Mitzvah, to his grandfather, Reb Chaim, when he was still living in Chaslavich. And then they have letters when he was mostly from the period of his life when he was a young man studying at university in Berlin and writing. He had a very, very vigorous correspondence in learning with his father, Moshe Soloveitchik. His father was in Eastern Europe and he was in Berlin and he was writing about the sugyas that he was working on. He was in the university and he was sitting and learning. And sometimes every once in a while you have different Rashi Yeshiva came to Berlin for medical treatment. So he every once in a while there'll be these sort of like slices of life in the letters where he describes, he met the Mir Rosh Yeshiva and he tried talking to him because he was in Berlin for medical treatment and he was talking to him and learning about this, about that, and this, or that. And it seems like he had very satisfying conversations and learning with his senior Rosh Yeshiva. And sometimes he writes to his father, it was absolutely unsatisfying. I think maybe it's about Mir Rosh Yeshiva. He writes, I want to tell him a shtickel Torah, but all he wanted to do was ask kashas. So we're like, which fits the Darche HaLimud. I had a whole shtickel Torah I wanted to say. He only wanted to handle, like, you can Rashi Tosfos. It was just like we weren't connected. But many of the conversations were very productive. You get a sense of where the Rav's mind was in learning, how many mesechtas he was sweeping across. The Hekif and the Omek over the course of the Berlin years. I think there are some letters also from his early years in America. So he has a letter there where he did develop some of this following as well, and it'll be most of a little bit of a nofech as well. Try to put the pieces together. In Eretz HaTzvi, Simeon Beis, which is officially about Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, but it's Kedarko Shel Rabbeinu about much more. I shared a little bit of a snippet of this with some of you last night. So Shechter pulls together threads from many of the Rav's Shi'urim in different contexts and different mesechtas, different topics over the course of many years. There is the point that a recurring theme was that the source of many Kedushos is Torah. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes less obvious. Very obvious. In the Chanukah Sugyas, we came across the Gemara beginning of the last part of Megillah. It talks about Tashmishe Kedusha Nignazim Tashmishe Mitzvah Nizrakin. That the Tashmishe Mitzvah, like the Shofar Sukkah Lulav, Tzitzis, when they're Lachar's Ma Mitzvasan, they have no lasting Kedusha. And yeah, you can't be Mavaza them, but you can throw them away Ba'ofen Mechubad. But you have Ritzuas of Tefillin, you have a case of a Mezuzah, that has lasting Kedusha, even Lachar's Ma Mitzvah, so has to go into Geniza, what we call colloquially in Yiddish, Shemes. Why? Because these have Kedusha and those don't. L'may Nafki, because these are Tashmishe Mitzvah. What makes one time? They're all Tashmishe Mitzvah. What makes those Tashmishe Kedusha? What gives them lasting Kedusha? So it seems pretty clear from the list that what gives the lasting Kedusha is Ksav Shel Torah. There's no Torah, there's no Shem Hashem, and more broadly, there's no Torah on the Esrog, on the Lulav, on the Shofar, on the Tzitzis. Unless you happen to have a pasuk embroidered on your talis, in which case maybe it does have to go into Shemes. But say for Tarat Tefillin Mezuzah, Ksav Shel Torah, so that's a permanent, that creates a permanent Kedusha. Involvement in a mitzvah creates temporary, ephemeral Kedusha for as long as the mitzvah is ongoing. Once the mitzvah is over, that's what we had dealt with the Shiltas, with the Moser Shem and Shebener Chanukah. The Rav pointed out it's true in many other contexts as well. That Torah, if you trace it back to its source, Torah tends to be the ideology, the source of various Kedushas. For instance, here's a famous Agadah. I'm sure you've all heard of it, and maybe never stopped to think about it. But now with maturing eyes and maturing mind, you can think about this agata analytically. Maybe you didn't even know that's a Gemara, but it's a Bavli in Maseches Nida. The Gemara talks about what it's like for the Tinok B'mei Imo, the fetus in utero. The Gemara describes some of what the experience is like to be pre-birth. And the Gemara very famously talks about the Malach teaches the Tinok Torah, and then on his way as about to be born, Balmach Torah upon him, Malach slaps him across the face. The Gemara does not say, as an aside, that he hits him above his nose, below his nose. That, as far as I can tell, is above Maisa. The Gemara does say the Malach slaps him across the face, and he forgets everything. Right? How many of you have heard of that Agata before? How many of you have ever asked a kasha on the Agata? Let's ask a simple kasha. Because you heard it low by then, and you heard it as a little child. Shang! Right? But if you think about it again with an analytic mind, what? Not Peshra, what does Agata mean? What does it mean? But pity the Malach, whose whole mission is to total futility, to teach Talmidim and then to snag all the learning away the moment before they're about to merge the world and be able to use it. What does it even mean? Malachim are meant to accomplish things. That's just futile. I mean, I teach and then I make you forget? What does that mean? And isn't it cruel? Yes, what a cruel tease. You take a little Jewish neshama, you teach him Kol Torah Kula, and then you snack it away. Then you snatch it away. Well, what is that? Ma, what was that? What are Chazal telling us? So the Rav suggests in a very beautiful drasha that there's a lot to say about the Agata, but let's excerpt a little bit. What Chazal are driving at is that we reject, certainly in terms of vis-a-vis Jews, perhaps vis-a-vis all human beings, we reject the notion of tabula rasa. We reject the notion that was put forward by some philosophers that you emerge in this world just a blank slate and you're born with zero. Gemara is telling us that a Jew emerges into this world with a connection to Torah. You don't remember the content of Torah, but lahavdil, I would say, there's a line they quote from various 20th century thinkers. The most palatable one is Albert Einstein, so we'll call this an Albert Einstein quote. It's better than calling it a B.F. Skinner quote. They say, b'shem Albert Einstein, that education is what remains when the information lost, when the information learned has been forgotten. The theory behind why you're going to spend 3 years learning French, even though by the time you're 45 years old, if you haven't been using it, you'll definitely have forgotten how to conjugate your verbs, is that if you use it every week, so then you're going to, okay, but use it or lose it. So if you lose it, what was the point of learning it? So the theory is, again, without getting, we can get involved in Torah Maya conversations some other time, but the theory is that it changes the gavra. It makes me an educated person. I may forget the details, but education is what remains when the information learned has been forgotten. So we can have a Torah Maya conversation at a different time. For those interested, yesterday morning I gave a shiur about a understudied passage of the Rambam Shmona Prakim, which is actually very important in terms of a substantive approach to Torah Maya. But certainly, in terms of Limud HaTorah, so what the Agadah is saying is that a Jew emerges into this world without any Torah knowledge, without any Torah content in his mind, but having had the experience of having rubbed shoulders, or rubbed neshamas, I should say, with Torah. I emerge into this world with a inchoate connection to Talmud Torah. Now I have the chance to learn. Now I have the chance to regain the material. I don't remember the material, but I had a close and intense encounter with learning, and that has shaped me, and that has changed me. I'm not just a blank slate. And that's the Pintaliyot. That's what the Rambam writes about famously in Hilchos Gerushin, that deep down every Jew has an innate desire to do the right thing. It often gets covered over by layers of accretion of distraction and taiva and stuff. But deep down, I have a natural intuition to do the right thing. It's right in Hilchos Gerushin, talks about in Hilchos Tshuva. Where does it come from? From that Agadah. Because every Jewish neshama emerges into this world with a, as it were, pre-programmed connection to Torah, preloaded with an encoded connection to Torah. And so the Rav suggested, Kedushas Yisrael is rooted in Torah. And he suggested that Kedushas Eretz Yisrael is rooted in Torah. It's a longer conversation about understanding the idea that Kibush was the Makadesh the first time around, and the Kibush was done, as the Psukim tell us, with the Aron heading in front of the Jewish army. And the Rav pointed that there are many, many Kedushas, perhaps not all, but most, if not all, Kedushas can be ultimately traced back to a root source in Torah. So that seems to be what's going on here as well. It sounds like, and there's a longer conversation with Aruch HaShulchan Asid and others, the Rambam does not count the Aron as one of the kelim that you're mechuyev to make in making a Beis HaMikdash. And that sounds like in the Hanami. You don't making a menorah is a partial kiyum mitzvah of Asiyas HaMikdash. Making a mizbech is a partial kiyum mitzvah of Asiyas HaMikdash. Making an Aron is not. Maybe if the Aron were to break, then we could build a different type of Aron. That's an indication you get from the end of Hilchos Sefer Torah, Perek Yud HaLachayyud. Now you just have to, the din of Aron is you have to have a makam mechubad for a Sefer Torah, or for Luchos, and certainly for a Sefer Torah. But the Psukim tell us, what is that? That's not part of the mitzvah of making a mikdash. Instead, that's not counted as a mitzvah because it's a hechsher mitzvah. Remember we said before that the Ramban felt that all the other kelim were not counted as mitzvahs because they're hechsherim. The menorah is a hechsher to the mitzvah of lakas ha-menorah. Making a shulchan is a hechsher to the mitzvah of asiyas of lachma panim. Making an aron is a hechsher mitzvah to the mitzvahs of karbanas. And the Rambam seems to hold the exact opposite. Making the kelim, that's part and parcel of making a mikdash. But not the aron. The aron is not part of making a mikdash. What is it? It's the hechsher to making a mikdash. It's not counted as a mitzvah because to have a mikdash, you have to have a makam mekudash. And the source of the kedusha of mikdash is the aron. Specifically, not so much the aron, but the luchos, the Torah. The original author's copy of the Aseret Sedibros. And that's why the Rambam in the first three prakim doesn't say a word about making Aron, because making an Aron is not part of the mitzvah of Asiyas HaMikdash. But as soon as he pivots from the mitzvah of making a mikdash to a discussion of the underlying kedusha of the mikdash, he begins right away with the Aron, with the Luchos, because that's the root of all the kedusha that's going to follow over the course of the next three prakim. And not only that, but the Rav and Yaakov Endin both suggest that that's why the Rambam was paskined on what seems like a non-halachic, purely historical machlokas. Why is the Rambam paskining with such a drama that the Aron ben Makom nignaz? Why is he taking a stand on a non-halachic machlokas? The answer is, apparently holds, it is a halachic machlokas. How is it a halachic machlokas? What are they arguing about? The answer is, the one who holds the Aron ben Makom nignaz, as the Rambam paskins, doesn't just hold that it happens to be historically that that's the way it worked out, that the Aron ben Makom nignaz, but he holds that had it not been nignaz, there would not have been a second Beis HaMikdash. The one who holds Aron Gol Bavel, everyone agrees there was a second Beis HaMikdash, and they brought Karbanos, and that space had Kedusha. So the Tanam will hold the Aron Gol Bavel, clearly holds that you can have Kedushas HaMikdash without the presence of Luchos. We disagree with that halachic proposition. We paskin Aron ben Makom nignaz, not just it happens to be that Baruch Hashem Yoshio saved the Aron, so we have that sentimental memento in the basement. It's the source of Kedushas HaMikdash. Without the Aron, there would be no Kedushas HaMikdash. It's not just a historical assumption, it's a halachic assumption. And as such, the Rambam is totally in character in paskinin. Does Machlokas HaTanam, does Kedushas HaMikdash depend on Luchos or not? Rambam paskins, yes, there was a second Beis HaMikdash because the luchos were in the basement. That's why. That's exactly how the Rambam presents it. The list of Esther Kedushas begin from the top, not just from the top level, but from the source. The luchos sheba aron, which were either during the first base of Mikdash, ground level in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and later on below, they were the source, they were and are the source of all of the Kedusha. Also, Mikdash v'shachanti v'socham. These are powerful ideas. They're powerful ideas. And Rebbe Sholem is giving us practical advice. We hope to soon fulfill practically the literal mitzvah of Asiyas HaMikdash. Machleket between the Rabbanim Machon Mikdash and some other Rabbanim about how perhaps the details of how much one can do, accomplish at this point before Mashiach in terms of the mitzvah Asiyas HaMikdash. Okay, the room for a halachic machlokas about that. We hope very soon to have the chance to fully fulfill the mitzvah of Asli Mikdash, the Bayis HaShlishi. The yesodos that emerge from understanding this sugya obviously have immediate relevance right here, right now. The awareness that Torah represents for us the potential for Kedusha, and that the way to realize that potential is by making Torah, putting Torah at the center of our lives. And that's, those are ideas that we're already, certainly have already been beginning to live, even without hearing the Shtickel Torah, over the past months and years, and ideas that we're going to continue to grow into even further, and as we continue to mature, emotionally mature and spiritually mature, over the next couple of months, and emerge them over many, many years. I'm very, very excited about upcoming Zman. We have a lot on the docket, a lot to accomplish with the tremendous amount of Amelus and the tremendous amount of Simcha Mirat Hashem. We're going to work hard over the next 4.5 months, and we will, Mirat Hashem, develop an incredible sense of satisfaction. We're going to work hard, we're going to accomplish a lot.